This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
In for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani along with Seth Payne this morning. Got you till 8 o'clock before we turn things over to Texans Radio. Make sure you keep it here on Sports Radio 610 all day, 10 until 2. The guys in the loop will be back in house today. Reggie Adetula, John Lopez, looking forward to that. Between now and then, Seth, I ask you the question, and I know you guys will have this discussion at some point this week between you and Sean Pendergast, but you know, how far behind the Lions are the Texans? That was a question you asked after the show on Friday. And just, I'm kind of curious if you think the Texans can at least tap into some of that over the course of the next, month plus and make a run.
I think the biggest thing is, and I realized after I'd asked that, okay, I could have just asked, all right, what do the Texans have to do to beat the Lions when they intercept Jared Goff 5 times? Because that's probably the sum total of everything. The Texans defense it's not a record-breaking defense or anything else like that. It's certainly capable, though, of being, you could take that defense and plop it down on multiple other teams in the league and say, oh yeah, you could win a Super Bowl with that defense. The offense is decidedly not that same thing. So really, okay, how do you win a game where you intercept the quarterback 5 times? How do you win 2 games this season where you're +3 in the turnover margin? When you look at the Lions, I think quarterback, I'm just 100% fine with C.J. Stroud. I feel better about his next 10 years over Jared Goff's next 10 years. It's hard not to just dial in on the offensive line. And then it's also hard not to notice, man, the Lions have not just one but 2 running backs that you get really nervous about. And then the way that the offensive coordinator ties it all together, I think those are the areas right now that are the most glaringly obvious. Okay, the offensive coordinator, the offensive line, and then the depth at running back is just night and day different than where the Texans are right now.
Yeah, boy, you're talking about offense tying everything together, and particularly Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator. You could ask a very similar question, like how far behind Bobby Slowick? How far behind is Bobby Slowick from Ben Johnson in his offensive innovation and what he's gotten his guys, the ability to do with some terrific skill players in Detroit, like the Texans have now acquired here in Houston, some terrific skill players. Maybe not, we'll never see the full iteration of what Bobby Slowick thought he was going to have at his disposal, but he got some pretty good weapons still here.
He has the weaponry. Like that's why there was so much optimism around the league. It wasn't just Houston bias or anything about what this Texans offense could do. And for the most part, the relatively impartial observers of quarterback play are still very impressed with the stuff that C.J. Stroud is able to do under imperfect circumstances. I think the tale with Brian Johnson can't be told without remembering that, oh yeah, he was a mid-season change in 2021. That the turnaround for the Lions really started when they demoted the play caller and made Brian Johnson the play caller, and then in the offseason going into 2022, he was named the offensive coordinator. That's what we were looking at earlier in the season as, hey, maybe there's a guy on staff that they feel as good about as Brian Johnson. And I mean, I was still, right up until all the Azeez Alshire hubbub, that was my biggest question going into the bye week was, okay, are they going to, is there anybody on staff right now that they feel really good about? And is D'Amico, would D'Amico actually pull the trigger at this point in the season when it's really your last chance? And all of that kind of fell by the wayside, partly because of the Aziz Alshire stuff, partly because the Texans scored two second half touchdowns versus one of the worst defenses in the league. But then also, I think it was also a matter of Nick Caserio just adamantly the other day saying flat out, no, there will be no change, or that they have faith in Bobby Slowick and they're not making a change. Like, it felt like he slammed the door shut on any speculation.
But,
about it.
Real quick, because I do want to get to some baseball stuff here, but I'm always intrigued by, making changes as offensive coordinator or play caller at this stage of the season. And we know teams do it, right? And we know there's been success, for teams that have done it. But
the Bills last year.
Yes, absolutely. But my question is always, okay, if you're going to make a change, that means the person that you're going to turn the reins over to that's in-house has different ideas, has better ideas, has things, up their sleeve that, you believe in that we should have been getting to as a football team. That's why you make a change, right? And that for whoever's in charge right now, in case of Bobby Slowick, just has been unwilling or not confident enough to do that. Well, when you don't make a change, does that signal that, hey, maybe Gerard Johnson or Bill Lazor or whoever, like, they're all simpatico. Like, nobody really has any original ideas, or nobody else could really do anything that, is going to get the best out of this group or optimize this group like Bobby Slowick could.
Yeah, I think that, Lazor's the guy on staff who has previous offensive coordinating experience, and none of it has been such of the variety that for sure, okay, this is a guy that can just, it's not like you've got a late stage Norv Turner or something where, he can come in and do something. Mm-hmm. It's not as much of a slam dunk. He was always in Lazors when he's had his chances. It's been in imperfect circumstances in Cincinnati or in Miami. But I think there's, and then I think with Gerard Johnson, a couple of listeners brought this up when we first started discussing Gerard Johnson. I think there's a hesitancy to take a guy who hasn't been an NFL assistant coach that long and who hasn't been a coordinator before to replace a guy that you're realizing he was also a first-time offensive coordinator. So you're going to go through the same growing pains. Ben Johnson had been like a non-quality control guy, like full-time assistant coach since 2013, I think. So he's got a couple of years a head start on Bobby Slowick. So I get that part of it. I think, in some regards, it's almost like I don't want to bring this team up, but, the Giants and the bump that they got that first year with Brian Daboll.
Yeah.
It was almost too much of a turnaround too soon, and it maybe obfuscated just how real all of the other challenges were. Mm-hmm. And you end up like being ramped up on your rebuild process faster than the public perception was that you're going to be. I think that, and I'm going to have to be okay with this, I think that Caserio and D'Amico probably look at it as, hey, you've got a young coordinator, these are the growing pains you're going to have, but we believe in him moving on into the future. It's just the fan base and myself are not going to buy into that until we actually see evidence of it on the field.
Well, you talk about buying into things. To get to this here, just the last few minutes of today's show, the Mets have bought into a lot of Juan Soto. They give him the richest deal in pro sports history last night. 15-year pact, $765 million, could be worth up to $800 million with escalators, no deferred money, according to reports, all that stuff. That's the biggest domino that possibly could have fallen, Seth. And I bring that up because prior to that, in fact, I think it was a day or two before, might have just been after we got off the show on Friday, but Willy Adames signed a deal with the San Francisco Giants. 7 years, $182 million. That's the biggest contract in Giants history. Bigger than Buster Posey's. But that's a big deal because reportedly that was one of the guys that maybe the Astros were looking at and that the Yankees were looking at. If, in fact, from the Astros' perspective, Alex Bregman was going to be deemed unsignable because of what he wants, that's a big deal. If the Astros are not willing to go, you know, 6+ years on Alex Bregman, probably not in the conversation really with Willy Adames. But the point is contingencies and plan Bs for the Astros are running short if, in fact, they don't make a decision on Alex Bregman. I think just by what we've learned over the course of the last 24, 48 hours, there's probably a decision or some finality, let's just say this, with Bregman at least, over the course of the next week, week and a half, that we should be looking out for.
The next week, you think?
I think so. I really do.
I've come to just be skeptical of any kind of like actual hot stove action in Major League Baseball free agency anymore.
Well, the reason why I say that is, look, you got the big domino that fell last night with Juan Soto. Now the attention turns, like, everybody's worried about, okay, is this guy going to be a $600 million player? Hell, he's almost an $800 million player now. Attention now turns to your, you know, tier two guys, so to speak. If Juan Soto was sitting by itself in tier one, now you look at, you know, your Alex Bregman types and what kind of deals are they going to be commanding and how much did the overall market change with his contract and if it has anything to do with, if one has anything to do with the other. I think players and teams really kind of want to have some finality before Christmas, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know. I also know Bregman's personality, and I feel like he's just so calm. I don't think there's any part of Bregman that's like agitating or calling Scott Boras and
not
saying,
now.
"Gotta get this deal done now, damn it!" He's just off in the batting cage somewhere with his son, just working on stuff, and Boras will handle it whenever he handles it. I guess the one thing about Adames that if you want to look on the optimistic side of it is it's the average per year is about the same. It's just one extra year. And we know that's the big part that the Astros get hung up on, and we might never they're not going to stretch that far.
Yeah. Hey, man, a lot of fun this morning. We'll talk to you again soon. Pendergast will be back tomorrow. Make sure you keep it locked in here. Coming up next, it's Texans Radio on Sports Radio 610.